The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It's in the Scottish Government's interest, not just to protect, obviously, public services, but also to show further divergence from the rest of the UK.
It does show the sort of strain that the market is under this winter.
The other factor playing into all this is Brexit. Neither political party will even contemplate relaxing EU migration. This is the elephant in the room, isn't it?
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. Welcome to the programme. The battle lines between striking workers who want better pay and the government with its anti-strike legislation seems to be hardening.
Yeah, on today's programme, we'll bring you the first Prime Minister's questions of the year. Strikes, I think, likely to be on the agenda. And later in the show, we'll speak to Pat Cullen from the Royal College of Nursing on the day that the health unions pull out of the independent pay review body.
Yeah, it really does show not many signs actually of progress so far this week on these multiple strike fronts. And yet at the start of the week, there did seem to be a little bit more of a fair wind. Are things souring now?
Yeah, it did feel like there was a little hint of progress at the beginning of the week. But as you say, things looking a lot worse by Wednesday. RMT leader Mick Lynch, giving evidence in Parliament today, says that his members are a long way off securing deals on the core issue of pay. Aslef, the train drivers union leader Mick Whelan, he says that the rail strike is further away from being resolved now than when it started last year. And of course, ambulance workers walking out for a second day today. I think, you know, one of those strikes, which whatever you think about the other ones, is, you know, is really worrying.
Yeah, look, it's enormously difficult. Also, I think added to that, all of these health unions, 14 of them, who represent more than a million workers, saying that they're not going to give evidence to the independent pay review process, is another kind of enormous spanner in the works. We were speaking to Pat Cullen just a few minutes ago from the Royal College of Nursing, who was telling us the government's got to speak to nurses, not about nurses, and that they're disrespecting the profession by sort of not engaging. It was a fascinating interview with this powerful leader. She represents 2/3 of all nurses in England and Wales.
Yeah, she says the biggest nursing leader in the world, in fact. And
yes,
she had some very strong things to say, as you say, about the government and also about the independent pay review process as well. Clearly, there's been a big breakdown on that, and a lot of unions, 14 unions in fact, pulling out of that today. There's been a big breakdown of that, something which has been used for many years.
Yeah, the other thing that I'll mention is the GMB union spoke to us on Bloomberg Radio this morning. They were sort of more hopeful on pay, saying that they think that there is a little bit of a shift in terms of pay from government. But on the anti-strike laws, I wonder if this is going to come up in PMQs now. Criminalising strike action is something that dictators do. It's something that Vladimir Putin does. That is what Andy Prendergast, the GMB union leader, told us on Bloomberg Radio.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this plays politically, this anti-strike legislation. You do feel that it is the sort of Tories playing to the base and the unions playing to their side as well. I'm not sure if he's going to really sway anybody's opinions. And I know that a lot of people are very sympathetic to some striking workers, less so to others. The idea of changing the law radically to on that front, quite controversial.
Yeah, very. But then, mind you, Pat Cullen was saying, look, the negotiations have to be with the pay review body and government. Does that review body that seems a lot of people seem to have lost faith in, does that kind of get shoved to one side? Very, very difficult moment. I also take away from that GMB union spokesperson a real dig at the Transport Secretary Grant Shapps, calling him a chancer on Bloomberg Radio.
Yes, a little bit, little cheeky that one. Yeah, Keir Starmer's standing up in Parliament now. Let's listen to him.
In the 13 years of the last Labour government, there were no national NHS strikes. Yep. Yeah. If the Prime Minister had negotiated with the nurses before Christmas, they wouldn't be on strike. If he'd negotiated with the ambulance workers, they wouldn't be on strike either. So why is he choosing to prolong the misery rather than end these strikes?
Yeah. Prime Minister. Mr
Speaker, we've always been clear that we want to have constructive dialogue with the unions. That is also why, when it comes to the issue of pay, we have accepted in full the independent recommendations of the pay review bodies. But now, the Honourable Gentleman simply doesn't have a policy when it comes to this question. If he wants, he talks about wanting to end the strikes. The question for him is simple then. Why does he not support our minimum safety legislation? We all know why. We all know why, Mr. Speaker. It's because he's on the side of his union paymasters, not patients.
Mr. Speaker, when I clapped nurses, I meant it. His response to the greatest crisis in the history of the NHS is to threaten to sack our nurses. His transport secretary says it's not the solution. His education secretary hopes it won't apply in schools. His own assessments say it could increase the number of strikes. The simple truth is you can't legislate your way out of 13 years of failure. Between 2010 and 2019, before anyone had heard of COVID, Prime Minister, the number of people stuck on the NHS waiting list doubled. Why do patients always wait longer under the Tories?
Whoa. This is the new year. I want to start off with the refreshed chamber, but certainly not by interruption. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about the minimum safety legislation. Let's just talk about it a little bit further, because this is a simple proposition that no one denies the union's freedom to strike, but it is also important to balance that with people's right to have access to life-saving healthcare at the same time. Mr. Speaker, this shouldn't be controversial. This shouldn't be controversial. The International Labour Organization supports minimum service levels. We have they're present in France, in Italy, in Spain. Normally, he's in favour of more European alignment, Mr. Speaker. Why not now?
Mr. Speaker, they've gone from clapping the nurses to sacking the nurses. Absolutely. It's that simple. To add insult to injury, they're the cause of the crisis. His government commissioned a report on waiting times. He knows this. His own report says this is not a COVID problem, it's 10 years of managed decline. As a result, 7.2 million people are now waiting for treatment. He says he wants to be held to account over that. So let's be very clear. Is his promise merely to get those numbers back to where they were before COVID, that's 4.6 million, or back to where Labour had them in 2010, almost half of that. Which is it?
Mr. Speaker, again, let's just start with the facts. The Honourable Gentleman seems to completely ignore the fact that not just in England, but in Scotland and in Wales and in many other European countries, COVID has had an extraordinary impact on health services. Now we have a very clear plan to bring the waiting list down, and it's one that the NHS supports. But I tell you what the NHS doesn't need. What they don't need is Labour's idea. What they don't need is Labour's only idea, which is for another completely disruptive, top-down, unfunded reorganisation, buying out every single GP contract. Now, these aren't my words, Mr. Speaker. The CEO of the Nuffield Trust said it will cost a fortune and it's out of date, just like the Labour Party.
Mr. Speaker, so he can't tell us how much he'll reduce waiting lists by or when. So much for accountability that he wants. As ever with this Prime Minister, you scratch the surface and you find there is nothing there. Last month, 1.4 million people waited more than 4 weeks for a GP appointment. When Labour left government, you were guaranteed an appointment in 2 days. When does the Prime Minister expect to get back to that?
Well, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to waiting lists, we've already eliminated 2-year wait lists, done last year. We're on track. We're on track. We're on track this spring to eliminate those waiting 18 months with a clear plan to go further, to eliminate those waiting 52 weeks by next spring. And we're doing that with record funding, more community diagnostic centres, more surgical hubs and more patient choice. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, I've made tackling waitlists one of my 5 priorities. But what are his? They seem to change every single week. At first, he was against NHS outsourcing. Now, he's apparently in favour of it. He's inconsistent, unprincipled, and in hock to his union.
I wonder if I... Order. Can I just remind the Prime Minister, it's Prime Minister's questions, not opposition questions. Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I heard the Prime Minister saying he's now registered with an NHS doctor, so he'll soon enjoy the experience of waiting on hold every morning at 8 a.m. to get a GP appointment. But I can tell him that those that are waiting now don't want another round of empty promises or boasting about what he's done. They just want to know when they'll be able to see a doctor. And this is not just about routine care. There could be nothing more terrifying than being told you might have cancer. That's why the last Labour government brought in a guarantee you'd been seen by a specialist within 2 weeks. Today, 50,000 people are waiting longer than that. 50,000. And everyone in this House will appreciate the anxiety that they're feeling. So when will cancer patients once again get the certainty of quick care that they got under Labour?
Mr. Speaker, why is there a challenge with cancer times right now? I tell you, again, it's just... I just absolutely no understanding of the situation, Mr. Speaker. What happened to cancer referrals during COVID? They went down by almost 2/3, Mr. Speaker. That was because of a pandemic that they went down. And by the way, if we had stayed and listened to him, we'd still be in lockdown and there'd be even more waiting lists. Mr. Speaker, but actually right now there are record levels of cancer treatment as we catch up with those missed things. But he talks about what's terrifying, Mr. Speaker. What's terrifying is that right now people not knowing whether when they call 999 they will get the treatment that they need. Now, Mr. Speaker, In Australia and Canada and the US, they ban strikes on blue light services. We're not doing that. All we're saying is that in these emergency services, patients should be able to rely on a basic level of life-saving care. Why is he against that, Mr. Speaker?
There's not a minimum level of service any day because they've broken the NHS. He's not promising that people would get to see a doctor in a few days, like they did under Labour. He's not promising that cancer patients would get urgent treatment, as they did under Labour. He's not even promising an NHS that puts patients first, like it did under Labour. No, he's promising that one day, although he can't say when, their record high waiting list will stop growing. And that's it. After 13 years in government, what does it say? But the best they can offer is that at some point they might stop making things worse.
Yeah. Right, Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to the NHS, it's crystal clear. The Conservatives on the side of patients, Labour on the side of their union paymasters. But, Mr. Speaker, I've laid out my priorities for the country. Waiting lists down, inflation down, debt down, growth up, and the boats stopped, Mr. Speaker. All he does is flip from one thing to another, and that's the difference between him and me. He's focused on petty politics. I'm delivering for Britain.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So that was the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak there ending that first encounter between him and the Labour opposition leader Keir Starmer. Look, we were wondering whether it was going to start on the strike action. And of course it did. Keir Starmer came straight out of the bat talking about strikes and what were the Conservatives going to do about it.
Yeah, he went straight in on strikes and on that anti-strike legislation. I think Keir Starmer rather pleased with his line. He says that the Tories have gone from clapping the nurses to sacking the nurses. A reference, of course, to the threat of being fired under the minimum service arrangements. Rishi Sunak saying that France, Italy, Spain and other countries have all got this kind of legislation in place. So, yeah, so a fight over this new law.
But then I thought Starmer's line about how the Tories have broken the NHS, that they're not promising any great revolution, any big change to put patients first in the NHS, but only to bring down waiting times. I thought that was quite hard hitting. So, look, this is an immensely serious issue. And so there you saw, I think, really the kind of true colours of both parties coming out. I want to talk about then the dispute, of course, because you've got ambulance workers on strike for 24 hours today. The nurses are planning 2 days of strikes next week. A smoke screen, a total farce past its sell-by date. Those are the terms that are being flung at the independent pay review body that's meant to be in charge of agreeing pay, as the health unions have announced today that they're not going to take part in this pay review process.
Yeah, well, earlier we spoke to Pat Cullen, General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing. She said that her organisation has been hoodwinked into lending credence to the process for years. We asked her whether she had any faith in the independent pay review process to deal with nurses' pay.
Well, I don't know if I used the words as strongly as that, but I don't believe that for the over half million nurses that the Royal College of Nursing represents, that a pay review process and the body that delivers on that process has delivered for the nursing staff of the United Kingdom. I don't believe that at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now, with nurses' pay having fallen behind significantly over this past decade, with year-on-year below inflation pay rises. The second thing that I do want to say about and I use this in inverted commas, the independent pay review body, is that they are not independent. They are appointed by government. They are paid by government and their terms of reference is set by government. And if you look, it's a matter of record, if you look at the process over that period of time, that is there for all to see.
Okay, I'm just clarifying also that the quote that I mentioned was from PA and from the Financial Times in terms of their quote of what you said about being hoodwinked.
I own those. I absolutely own those quotes because I do believe very, very strongly that it has not delivered for our profession.
Where does this leave us going forward, given the lack of trust between the two sides at the moment? And this is with an independent pay review body. Surely this puts us even further behind, doesn't it, in terms of future negotiations?
Well, the pay review body evidence was to be submitted today, as you will know. And last week, I issued a very comprehensive letter to the pay review body chair, asking a number of questions and looking for clarification on a number of areas on behalf of our over half million members. I got a response that didn't address any of those areas that I raised in my letter to the pay review chair.
Okay. So, Pat, what do you see then as the alternative if it's not the independent pay review process? Is it direct negotiation with government?
Well, it has to be both, doesn't it? If the process remains in place and we can actually manage to shape the process moving forward. Now, the joint health unions issued a statement this morning, and we're part of those arrangements, to say that, again, as a joint arrangement, we issued a series of very tough questions to the PRB, and the joint position is that they will not be submitting evidence as a collective to the pay review process, which is due to be submitted today. Now, from the Royal College of Nursing perspective, as I said, we have issued our letter, and we are still considering our response as an organisation before a final decision. However, we are primarily seeking urgent and direct negotiations with government. That's a priority for us, and that needs to happen irrespective of where we are headed with the pay review body and the process that it delivers.
And what are the hope of those urgent negotiations taking place? It does still feel like the mood has not been improving really in these negotiations.
No, certainly not in the meetings that I've had to date, which have been two with the Secretary of State. However, at the weekend, Pat, we felt that the Prime Minister placed himself at the centre of both the NHS crisis, and obviously one of the key priorities within that crisis is to address the industrial action by our nursing staff. And we felt that there was certainly a slight shift in the Prime Minister's position over the weekend, and that gave us a glimmer of hope, to be honest. And we felt that there may have been follow-up talks involving the Prime Minister as this week has moved on, because we are now a matter of days out from the next strike action with our nursing staff on the 18th and 19th of January. So, but that hasn't moved with the Prime Minister. However, I'm maybe, again, living with optimism all of the time. I'm hopeful that there may be some discussions with the Secretary of State before the weekends. Mm. And those discussions must address, they must be the beginning of a negotiation for pay in the current year, which is 22-23. There is no point in the Secretary of State having another meeting with myself as the General Secretary and saying that pay is off the table and not for discussion. That will certainly not resolve our dispute. It will not avert the strike action on the 18th and 19th of January. So the ball is firmly within the government's court at this point in time.
Okay, so Stephen Barclay, the Health Secretary, indicating that there may be a willingness to consider a one-off bonus and or backdating pay for the 2023-24 pay rise period. That is not enough then to call off the nurses' strike action?
Well, look, as it stands, neither that discussion around the one-off payment idea nor the backlog idea has been put to me formally or informally. And I would say to the Secretary of State, but also to the Prime Minister, they are disrespecting nurses by talking about them instead of talking to them. And they will talk to nurses through me as the largest professional nursing organisation in the world. If they've got ideas and offers, open up negotiation and I'll absolutely hear them out. I said very loud and clear over this past week and a half, I will meet them on behalf of our members halfway. But those negotiations I can't do on my own, at a table on my own. I can't do on the airwaves. That would be inappropriate. But I certainly will not be found wanting day or night coming to a table and to negotiate on behalf of our members.
If the Health Secretary came to you with a one-off bonus, perhaps a generous one-off bonus, would that solve some of your concerns? Would that help nurses?
Look, again, I'm not fudging the issue. I want to negotiate at the right table. And there they will find out that I want something significant and need to see long-term investment and thinking, not short-term payoffs. That will not resolve the issues. But let's get round the table and let's start negotiations in earnest. And I'm ready and willing to do that any time of the day or night.
Okay. Let's talk about the anti-strike laws. First, Prime Minister's questions of the new year between the Prime Minister and Keir Starmer. Grant Shapps, the business secretary, praised your organisation just earlier this week for being a good actor on ensuring minimum service levels, even during strike action. As a so-called good actor, are you backing the new government rules that will potentially become legislation on the requirement for minimum services?
Look, as a nurse of 42 years, leading this industrial action on behalf of over half a million nursing staff, we have always said, and I think that has been borne out now, that we would never add any further risk or unsafe care as a result of the action that we are taking. We have been very careful, very steady, very safe, and very effective in holding any industrial action. No nurse will walk away from their patients and leave their patients.
So you're not against this new legislation?
I think this government would be much better concentrating their time in putting in place safe nurse staffing legislation that we've been calling for a seriously long time now, that will protect patients and protect nurses and put the responsibility and accountability at the doorstep of Westminster and not with the ward sister and the nurses that are trying to work every day with 47,000 unfilled posts in the system in England alone. That's what we have been asking for. They had an opportunity to do that with the bill passing through last year, and they would not step up to the plate and do it. So for me, I think it's disingenuous now to start to look at minimum safe staffing level on a day of strike when our nursing staff are battling every single day with a totally depleted workforce, and that responsibility sits on their shoulders, the lowest paid workforce that you can possibly have in a system. And I think that's grossly unfair, and it's again another symptom of the disrespect that has been shown to this profession.
That was Pat Cullen, General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing. Nurses and government at loggerheads over pay, the NHS dominating the first Prime Minister's questions of the year. That's it from us for today. This episode produced by James Walcock. Marufal Hussain was on sound. I'm Caroline Hepke with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.